second speaker today is Dr. Michelle Levine. Dr. Levine is assistant professor of Bible at Stern College and holds a master's degree from Revel Graduate School and a PhD from New York University. She lectures widely across the tri-state area, and in particular, she has a weekly lecture series on Tanakh at the Queens Jewish Center. Dr. Levine.
Everyone has received the source books. Yep. In Masechet Rosh Hashanah, we learn Arba'a Rashei Shanim Heim, that there are four different New Years, Rashei Shanah, which have been designated throughout the 12-month cycle, which have great halachic ramifications for certain practical mitzvot. Among them, we learn on the end of the second line that on the first day of Tishrei, Be'echad B'Tishrei, it is a Rosh Hashanah, among other things, for Nitziah and Yirakot, for planting and vegetables. Furthermore, we learn that Be'echad B'Shvat, on the first day of Shvat, it is Rosh Hashanah La'ilan. It is the new year for trees, at least according to Beit Shammai, and according to Beit Hillel, which is, of course, the opinion that we follow, it is Chamisha Asar Bo, on the 15th day of Shvat. If you notice, there are actually two different Rashi Shana with regard to plants. Echad B'Tishrei, regarding Nitziah, planting, and the month of Shvat, be it Aleph Shvat or Tu B'Shvat, with regard to the Ilan, with regard to the tree. As we all know, there are many mitzvot which involve plants. The mitzvot of Maaser and Truma, the mitzvah of Orla and Netaravai regarding fruit. So for example, if you plant a tree 45 or more days before the first day of Tishrei, I shouldn't even say a tree, you plant a sapling. The first year of Orla, whereby whatever benefits you would derive from the produce is prohibited during these first 3 years. The first year would be over by the end of Elul. And the second year would begin on the first of Tishrei. And then on the first day of Tishrei, 2 years later, you would enter into the fourth year, which is Netaravai, during which time you would bring the fruit to Yerushalayim and it would be eaten there. Why 45 days being the mark point? Because it takes 14 days for the planting to take root, and halachically you need a minimum of 30 days to be considered a year. Furthermore, we know, however, that there is a little bit of a problem, because we also learned that there's another Rosh Hashanah with regard to the month of Shvat. Why is this? Because in actuality, after 3 years have passed, this Nitziah, this planting, this sapling is really no longer technically a Nitziah. It has now grown to the point that it is an Ilan. It is really a tree. And the new year for trees only begins with the month of Shvat. Let's follow Beit Hillel with Tu B'Shvat. That is, the young tree now, in actuality, retains its Orla status until the 15th day of Shvat, when it enters into the state of Netaravai, so that the fruit that grows between one Tu B'Shvat and the next Tu B'Shvat would be considered the fruit of the fourth year of Netaravai. With regard to Ma'asrot, for example, trees that began to blossom before Tu B'Shvat cannot be combined with trees that blossomed afterwards for the purposes of Ma'aser. So that trees, for example, that blossom in the third year of the Shemitah cycle, before Tu Bishvat are treated as if they are trees that grew in the second year. And therefore, Ma'aser Sheni would be separated from this fruit and brought to Yerushalayim to be eaten there. Fruit that blossoms after Tu Bishvat would require the separation of Ma'aser Ani, which belongs to the third year of the Shemitah cycle. Why is it that we switch from Nitiah, whose Rosh Hashanah is Aleph Tishrei, to Ilan, whose Rosh Hashanah is the month of Shvat? Because, as we learn in Masechet Shvi'it, when we look at this particular planting, this particular sapling, and we see a tree, we see something that no longer has the potential for development, but we see something that has permanence, established, rootedness, something that now can bestow its fruits, literally, its produce on others, and can give forth greater benefit. We are really entering into a whole new stage of the cycle of nature. And this new stage, the Mishnah determined, should be marked by a new Rosh Hashanah, a new sense of renewal, a new sense of awakening, of hit-orirut, of hit-chad-shut. The month of Shvat was determined to be the Rosh Hashanah la'ilanot, because as Gemara explains, ho'il v'yatzu rov gishmei Hashanah. Most of the year's rain has already ended. And since trees generally grow from rainwater, the Tosafot explains that trees that blossomed before Shvat must have blossomed because of last year's rain. Why the machloket between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, where Beit Shammai says the first day of Shvat, whereas Beit Hillel says the 15th? One opinion, which is promoted by the Meiri, explains that Tu Bishvat is the exact middle of the month of Shvat, or it is also the middle of the winter season, of what he calls Tkufat Tevet. And after this date, the weather begins to warm, and Chanata, blossoming, begins in earnest. Let's take this a little further. Now that I've given you some of the halachic background, my main focus is going to be on the hashkafic, the philosophical and the ideological background of what it is about celebrating Tu Bishvat. Because interestingly, from the time of the Arizal, the great Kabbalist, they used to have the custom that on Tu Bishvat, one would eat from many of the different fruits of the land. And one would presume that this great minhag was in order to express the desire that now the year will be blessed with an abundance of fruit and produce. But there are those who ask, based on this minhag, why is it, for example, that as we see in source number one, the first day of Elul is a Rosh Hashanah l'ma'aser behema? If that's the case, the question is asked, why don't we eat, for example, on the first day of Elul, the head of a keves, the head of a sheep? Because wouldn't that be a way of concretely expressing our desire that the year should be blessed with fertile animals who give birth to many young? Why dafka are we celebrating Tu Bishvat, this particular Rosh Hashanah, and not other Rosh Hashanah in a similar manner? And I think it is because of the philosophy behind the whole Chagigah of Tu Bishvat. We learn in source number two in a very interesting midrash, which is based on a pasuk in Vayikra Perek Yotet, V'chi tavo'u el ha'aretz unetatem kol etz ma'achal. Notice that the very first activity, which is commanded when Bnei Israel are going to enter the land of Israel, is to do what? Is to plant. The Or HaChaim on this context, of course, explains that this certainly shows our love and our connection to the land, that we want to establish ourselves in the land. We want to literally take root in the land by planting plants that themselves take root. So therefore, the Midrash says, Amar lahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeYisrael, Af al pi shetimtzu otam mele'a kol tuv, lo tomru neshev velo nitach. Hashem said to Bnei Israel, when you enter the land of Canaan and you find that it is quite fertile already, don't become complacent and say, we will sit, we will be passive, and we will not plant. Ela hevu zihirin banetiot. Be very careful with plantings. Shene'ema unetatem kol etz ma'achal. Keshem shenichnastem umetzatem netiot. Shenatnu acherim afatem heyunot im livnechem. Just like you found produce that is already flourishing in the land, you must also plant for future generations. You must continue the tradition of propagation, of production, of flourishing and blossoming. So that a person cannot say, Shelo yomar adam, ani zaken, I'm an old person. Kama shanim ani chai, ma ani omed mityagea la'acherim. Lemachar ani meit, I'm going to plant, and I won't see the benefits of all of my effort. The Midrash warns, Lo yivatel adam min hanetiot. You may not excuse yourself from the activity of nitiah. But k'shem shematza od yosif v'ita afilu yiyazaken. Even if you're an old man, person chronologically, you must engage in this activity of nitiah. What is so important about the activity of planting that it is so put at the forefront of the first actions that we must do when we enter Eretz Yisrael? The Midrash answers at the end of source number 2, and it is elaborated upon in yet another Midrashic source in source number 3. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeYisrael, Limdu mimeni, Hashem said to Bnei Israel, learn from me. Kivyachol ani tzarich, it's as if I need plantings also. Shene'emar, Vaita Hashem Elokim Gan Be'eden Mikedem. That after Hashem completed creating the world and all of the living beings in it, the final creation being that of the human being, what did Hashem do? The activity of planting. He planted a garden. He planted trees in a garden. And playing on the word mikedem from the idea of kadmon, it was his first activity after what we thought was the cessation of all of his creative activities. So the Midrash elaborates in source number 3. Rabbi Huda bar Simon Patach, Acharei Hashem Elokeichem Telechu. You should follow after Hashem. And the latter part of the Pasuk reads, Uvo Tidbakun. And you should cling to Hashem. V'chi efshar levasar v'adam lahaloch achar HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Is it really possible to follow after the ways of Hashem? Oto shekatuv in Tehilim bayam darkecha shvilcha b'mayim rabim, that he is able to make the waters recede and to part. Ve'ata omer acharei Hashem telechu bo tidbakun? Is it really possible to cling to an entity like Hashem? Ve'chi efshar levasar v'adam la'alot l'shamayim ulihidabek bashchina. When one clings to another person, you literally grab on to that person. You hold on to that person, sometimes for dear life. So the Midrash says, is it really possible to go up to the heavens and cling to God? Ela, on the fourth line, mitchilat briyato shel olam, lo mitasek ha-kadosh baruch hu, ela b'matat chila. From the very beginning of the creation of the world, what did Hashem busy himself with? After we thought, vayichal melachto, that he finished all of his activities, he busied himself with what? Nitziah, planting, quoting you the same pasuk from the story of Gan Eden. Afatem kshenichnasim la'aretz, lo titasku ela b'matat chila. You too, your very first activity, after you thought you were done, you conquered the land, you're not done. You're only beginning. And start with the activity of planting, of nitziah. Now, there are many ways that we can play with the creative analysis of the Midrash, or perhaps the philosophical profundity of the message of this Midrash, and I'm sure many of you could certainly come up with your own ideas. Some ideas that I thought of were the following. First of all, when you plant something, something that is established, that takes root, that has a sense of continuity, a sense of permanence, in actuality, you are really imitating kivyachol who Hashem is and what He's all about. We read in the Shema that Hashem is Yatsiv, V'Nachon, V'Kayam, that Kiso Nachon, V'Emunato La'ad Kayamet. What is Hashem? He is Yatsiv. He is established. He's rooted, Kivyachol. He's permanent. He is completely stabilized. He is a sense of continuity, timelessness, perpetuity, eternity. In order for us to have a sense of shleimut, to really feel a sense of completion, even psychologically, you need to feel rooted somewhere. You need to feel that you belong somewhere. You need to feel that you're established. You are a part of something. You need to have an achiza, a foothold somewhere. And what is Eretz Kanaan called in the brachot that Hashem gives to Yaakov in Sefer Breishit? He calls it what? An achuzat olam. A foothold, an achiza, somewhere where you really feel literally planted. You feel a sense of permanence, but it means also that your roots are spreading out so that it can be imparted to future generations as well. That you have this sense of eternity, of continuity, kivyachol, like Hashem. But there's more we can learn. Hashem, after finishing the creation of the world, we learn in Perek Bet in Sefer Breishit, and we all say this in the Kiddush, Vayivarech Elokim et Yom HaShvi'i, Vayikadesh Oto, Ki Vo Shavat Mikol Melachto, Asher Bara Elokim La'asot. And we all know that the Mefarshim asked, it should have said that Hashem rested from all of the work that He created, ve'asa, and He did in the past tense. Why does it say la'asot, to do in the future tense, as or in the infinitive, as if there is more to do? So therefore, we have to understand that when Hashem immediately goes about performing the activity of planting, He is telling us, He's not done with this world. He did not create the world like a machine where He pressed the on button and now it will continue to operate and function on autopilot. But rather, Hashem is continually creating within a world that is really not finished. It always needs more creation. By the human being planting, he is actually serving as a partner with Hashem in this creative process. We learn in the davening what? Hamechadesh b'tuvo b'chol yom tamid ma'aseh b'reshit. Every single day, Hashem renews tamid continually b'chol yom ma'aseh b'reshit, the act of creation. And how did Hashem express this? Through planting. And how do we express that we understand this partnership with Hashem? Through planting. What Hashem did when he planted this Gan Be'eden is he literally planted his presence among us. The Elyonim came down to the Tachtonim. The upper world came down to the lower world. And Hashem emphasized to us that he has not created the world and abandoned it, but his hashgacha pratit, his divine intimate providence, is literally in this world. It is even found within the plants, within nature, within the earth itself. He is not a transcendental God. He's an immanent God who is among us. And it is really quite fitting that Hashem asked us to be partners with him, because we learn that man is really created as a synergy between the upper worlds and the lower worlds. We are Adam, Adama on the one hand. We are created from the earth, the dust of the earth on the one hand. But we are also created from Selem Elohim. We have that Nishmat Chaim in us. We have that divinity in us as well. We serve as that bridge between the upper and the lower worlds. Hashem came down to us and showed his Hashgacha Pratit among us. We rise up to him. We create that bridge through our imitative and emulative act of planting. We learn in source number 4 that Rav Hirsch, lamenting about the fact that in his time we are in Galut and we don't live in our land, that Bagola ein tu bishrat ela ta'arich shebaluach, that in exile, tu bishrat, it's just a date on the calendar. Ma shone mizeh ruach hayahadut b'makom sheyichola litvateach ke'avat nafsha ma'amida hiotanu betoch hateva hachev makom sham yishtamesh ha'adam bekochotav bivrit amitza im hateva v'yamid et ma'avaya bekochotav tachat birchato. We learn in Masechet Yevamot, Adam she'en lo karka eino Adam. A person who doesn't have land is really not a person. We really need rootedness, connectedness. We need a sense of settlement and establishment. We could apply this and say, Am she'en lo karka eino Am. A nation that has no land is really not a nation. Yes, we survive in Galut, but it's kind of a topsy-turvy form of survival. Rav Hirsch emphasizes how different the celebration and the message of Tu Bishvat is when we are in our own land. Because what do? There we renew, we reenact, we rejuvenate what? The brit, the contract, the treaty, amitza, the strong contract with what? With teva. Because in actuality, Rav Hirsch is telling you that teva, nature, is the forum, the podium through which Hashem speaks. It is his voice, kivyachol, through which he demonstrates his manifest presence among us. And when we reconnect with Teva, with our natural state connecting to the land which belongs to us, we reenact that understanding that Hashem is found everywhere. He is found within the world, and how do we seek out his voice? How do we release that voice? By reconnecting, says Rav Hirsch, with Teva, with nature. Let's expand upon this a little bit. Because of this, in source number 5, while there is a machloket in the Gemara, in Masechet Sanhedrin, as to when exile will end. Will it end when we do tshuva and ma'asim tovim? Will it end when Hashem finally decides enough, no matter how great or bad we are? Rabbi Abba says, you've got it all wrong. You know how we will know when galut is over and we are in the Chevlei Mashiach or Pa'amea Mashiach, we're hearing the bells ringing that Mashiach is arriving. Ein lechaketz megule mizeh sheneemar ve'atem harei Yisrael anpechem titenu uferichem tis'u le'ami Yisrael ki kervu lavo. Rashi tells us, kishetiten eretz Yisrael pirya ba'ayin yafa, az yikrav haketz. Ve'ein lechaketz megule yoter. When will we know that Mashiach is really arriving? When will that be openly manifest to us? When we begin to see the land of Israel flourish, blossom, become fertile once again. Interestingly, Rabbi Abba is telling you that when we experience Hester Panim in Galut, and we feel that Hashem has kivyachol hidden his hashgacha pratit from us, and we don't feel his presence among us, Rabbi Abba says, when will you begin to feel that Hashem is really here for you? And that really the galut is about to end and ge'ulah is going to begin? Not through some fantastic nace, not through fire and thunder and lightning, but through what? The flourishing of plants, the branchings of trees, the blossoming of fruit. This is where Hashem once again reveals his voice to us, so to speak. When he does what he did in Gan Eden, he plants again. He brings us back full cycle. Why? Because this represents renewal, awakening. When we feel that dead earth, kivyachol, wakes up, then we know that our dry bones, as Yechezkel calls us in Galut, we know that we are going to awake once again. And when the nations of the world say, you are a dead nation, chas v'shalom, you have lost your life and your vitality, when we see Eretz Yisrael begin to bloom, when Hashem speaks through the tachtonim, literally, through the dust of the earth, and he brings its potential forth, it starts to bear fruit, he's sending us a message that he's going to breathe life into us once again as well. When he renews his contract with the world through nature, that brit amitzayim ateva, he signals to us he's going to renew his brit with us as well. And as we learn, he's going to give us a lev chadash kivyachol, a new heart, or a brit chadasha. He's going to renew that contract with us as a nation. So therefore, in source number 6, we learn, the Gemara in Masechet Megillah teaches us, Umar ra'ul omar kibbutz galiyot lachar birkat hashanim. Why is it in the Shmona Esrei, first we say, Barech Aleinu, right? Shana Tova, etc., Birkat HaShanim. And after that, Tekah B'Shofar Gadol L'Cheiruteinu. We read about Kibbutz Galiot. Really, what does one have to do with the other thematically? So the Gemara answers with the same pasuk quoted from Yechezkel. First, when you see the bracha, v'teintalu matar libracha al panei adama, when you see the flourishing of the land, you know, tekah b'shofar gadol l'cheiruteinu. You know that the geula is going to arrive. So that the Ramban, writing in the 13th century, when the land of Israel is in ruins, it's just been overrun by the Mongolians in the 1250s and by the Crusaders. The Ramban writes, based on Vayikra, he's writing it in Pasuk Tedzayin, but he's really relating to Pasuk Lamed Bet, where the Pasuk reads in Source 7, V'ashimoti ani et ha'aretz, v'shamemu alea oivechem ha'yoshvim va, b'sora tova mevaseret b'chol ha'galuyot, she'ein arzenu mekabelet ot oivenu. This is great news, that the land will be desolate when we are in Galut, and that the enemies will be desolate when they live in Eretz Yisrael. V'gam zor aya gdola v'haftacha lanu, ki lo timsa b'chol ha'yishuv, Eretz asher hi tova v'chava, v'asher hayta noshevet me'olam, v'hi chareva kamoa. There is no other land which was so fertile and so verdant, which now became so desolate. Ki me'az yatzanu mimena, lo kibla uma velashon, v'chulam mishtadlim lehoshiva, ve'en le'el yadam. Every nation is trying to bring back the fertility of the land, and they do not succeed. So that, of course, is very interesting, that Dafka on Tu Bishvat is when the first Knesset was opened, the first Knesset convocation was met in Eretz Yisrael, the newly established land, in 1949. And the Nasi Chaim Weizmann says, Anu tikva tfila, ki kibbutz galuyot, source 8, yelech v'yitrachev, v'yakif hamonim yoter v'yoter gdolim shel b'nei amenu, asher yaku po shoresh. V'yatu shchem am kulan, im kulanu levinyan min dina Israel, ulehafrachat shimimoteha. He understood. The only way to prove that we are now a newly vibrant nation is to do what? Yaku po shoresh, literally and figuratively, and what? To cause the desolation to have flowering, pricha, to blossom once again. But I want to take this now a step much deeper. And I want to analyze, what is it about teva, about eitz, ilanot, nitiot, what is it about all of this that really speaks to us and our relationship with Hashem? You all know the famous pasuk in source number 9, the phrase from Dvarim, ki ha'adam eitz hasadeh, that man is compared to the tree of the field. And Rav Hirsch philosophically expounds, tkumato shel ha'etz einena mushreshet ba'anafim uve'alim uve'perot ha'mefo'arim, ela b'shorashav, shehem muchzakim b'makom asher haruchot v'se'arot lo tigana shama. That really the sustenance of and the survival and the strength of a tree does not derive from its fruit or its leaves or its branches, but from its roots. The roots which plant it into the ground and prevent it from falling over during the winds and the storms. And therefore, he says, where I have bold-faced, Kehu ha'adam, this is man. Kol zman shehu nitzmad l'shorashav haruchaniyim, shum ruach lo ta'akor oto mimkomo, v'nahafochu, ha'se'arot to'orerna et koach ha'hitchadshut. figuratively, if man, if Am Yisrael, sticks to its spiritual roots, continues in the tradition, and follows in the footsteps of the forefathers, then no wind, so to speak, no trial, no tribulation will be able to uproot him. Just the opposite. It will make us stronger, and it will make us more steadfast in our desire to renew our spiritual heritage and legacy. So what is this spiritual heritage and legacy? What is it that we should learn on the cusp of Tu Bishvat? In source number 10 in Mishle, we learn that Chochmah personified calls out in the streets. Halo Chochmah tikra utvuna titen kola. Wisdom, a female, personified, calls out in the streets and invites everyone to listen to her great pearls of thought. And this is a very unusual perek, because we never hear something like this anywhere else in Tanakh. And what do we find out about Chochmah? Hashem kanani reshit darko. Kedem mif'alav me'az. Me'olam nisachti, me'rosh mikadmei aretz. Hashem created me at the very beginning of his ways. I am the first creation. Before anything else was created, Hashem created Chochmah. And you can see all of the temporal adverbs, me'olam, be'en tehomot, be'terem, ad lo asa chutzot. And as a result, in Pasuk Chav Zayin, Chochmah was present at the time of creation. Bahachino shamayim sham ani. I was there at the time of creation. And as I bold-faced in Pasuk Lamed, Vaye etzlo amon, vaheye sha'ashu'im yom yom, mesacheket lefanav bechol et, mesacheket betevel arzo, v'sha'ashu'ay et b'nei adam. Chochmah, that is the Torah, speaks to us in a way that the Torah never speaks elsewhere in Tanakh. And she says, kivyachol, I was created before anything else was created. I was present when everything else was created. I was a sha'ashu'im. I was a delight to Hashem yom yom, where source number 12 explains it means 2,000 years. Every yom for Hashem is 1,000 years. 2,000 years before I was given to the world, I was playing before Hashem, misacheket lefanav bechol eit, and then I became a delight for all of the created world as well, misacheket betevel arzo v'sha'ashuay et b'nei adam. How was the Torah present before Hashem as his delight, kivyachol, playing before him? She says, v'aheyeh Etzlo Amon. A famous phrase which has really stimulated a plethora of scholarship. But among the opinions as to how to understand this phrase, we read in source 11, Amon should be understood as Uman, an artisan, a craftsman, from the word Aman, an artist. HaTorah omeret, ani hayiti kli umanuto shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Torah says, I was the artist's tool in the hands, kivyachol, of Hashem. And the metaphor, the mashal that is given, is that when a person goes to build a palace, he can't build it unless he has blueprints. so that you know exactly where to put the lamps and where to hang everything. And therefore, kach haya HaKadosh Baruch Hu mavit b'Torah uvara et ha'olam. Hashem looked into the Torah and He created the world. Therefore, the Torah says, B'reishit bara Elokim. With reishit, Hashem created the world. In reishit ela Torah, sheneemar Hashem kanani reishit darko. There is, however, another opinion with regard to this midrash. I should have probably cited for you. And that is, don't read Amon as Uman, an artisan, but as Omein, like Vayihi Omein et Hadasa hi Esther, as being brought up, being raised, being a nursling, so to speak. Ka'asher Yisa ha'Omein et Hayonek. Putting these ideas together, very difficult to comprehend this midrash that says as if Hashem needs a partner in the creation of the world, that He needed a blueprint that is the Torah in order to create the world. On the one hand, we can certainly say that the Torah, being Chochmah, is the fundamental principle, the pillar, the foundation on which the world operates. And for the sake of time, you can look on your own in source number 21, where the Midrash says, therefore, ha'olam lo nityased ela ha'latorah, that the pillar of the world is the Torah itself. And therefore, we know that yom hashishi, why the extra hay? Because Hashem said that unless B'nai Yisrael on the sixth of Sivan, hashishi, accept the Torah, with hay, with chamisha chumshei Torah, and observe the Torah and mitzvot, and He's just going to return the Torah, the world, to tohu vavohu. Why? Because the world is built on the foundation, on the pillar of the Torah. But there's more to it. Because when Hashem was an omein of the Torah, when He raised up the Torah, when He nurtured it, when He trained it, kivyachol, when He educated it, what did Hashem do? He infused His divine chokhmah, His wisdom into the Torah. And then through this Torah, He used it, kivyachol, as an uman, as kli umanuto, as His artistic tool, as His blueprint to create the world. What does that mean? That when you look at the world and how it was created, specifically looking at Teva, looking at nature, and we watch the flowers bloom and the fruit produce, and we understand all the intricacies of nature, that only two atoms of hydrogen with one atom of oxygen will combine to form a molecule of water, and that this can't be any other way, because if you have two atoms of hydrogen and two atoms of oxygen, it's no longer water, it's hydrogen peroxide. If you understand the intricacies of Teva and you look into the world, then you will understand and you will discover the blueprint, the Torah itself, in a broad conceptual right understanding. Skip for a moment. So therefore, in source number 13, the Rambam tells you what? How do you come to love and fear Hashem? When you look into the world, you find the divine wisdom. You find the Torah, which is the divine wisdom. The world is the Torah. The Torah is the world. And therefore, if you just skip for a moment to source number 20, we learn in Tehillim, in Perek Yotet, Hashamayim misaprim kivod kel, umaaseh yadav magid harakia. The heavens speak out the greatness of Hashem. But what's the problem? Ein omer ve'ein dvarim beli nishma kolam. You can't hear what? You can't hear their voice. And in that same, you have source 20? Yeah? Okay. And in that same perek, we read a few psukim later, Torah Hashem tmima, meshivat nafesh, edut Hashem ne'emana, the Torah is a great witness, a loyal witness to Hashem, machkimat peti, she makes the fool into a wise person. So the Mefarshim asked, you started off the Mizmor, David HaMelech, talking about nature, the Shamayim, and the Rakia, and there it talks about the Shemesh. How come all of a sudden, a few psukim later, you're talking about what? The Torah. What does one have to do with the other? There are many ways to explain it, but I found very interesting the opinion of Rav Yitzchak Arama of the Akedat Yitzchak, who says, HaTorah veHa'olam nitachdu yachad b'ma'ane v'hilul. The Torah and the world, the Torah and nature, they unite together in helping us learn more about our relationship to Hashem and who Hashem is. Ha'echad talui b'chavero v'hu hadfus elav. The world and the Torah complement one another. They are mirror images, kivyachol, of one another. Through looking at the world, we discover Hashem. Through learning the Torah, we discover Hashem. And if we use that midrash, they're really one and the same. Because the Torah is the world. It is the blueprint for the world, because the Torah was raised up and it contained the divine wisdom which was infused into it, and it is through the divine wisdom that the world was created. When you connect with Teva, when you connect with creation, with everything about the world, looking at the stars and the earth below, the heavens and the plantings, you understand the greatness of Hashem. So I would just like to, I know, do I have a few minutes or? Okay. I know we started a little later. I would just like to elaborate a little bit about what is this divine wisdom that is communicated to us through looking at the world, whereby we appreciate more what Hashem and his blueprint, the Torah, are all about. The Malbim teaches us a number of very interesting lessons. Go to source 14. And let me explain to you. I remember the Malbim lives in the 1800s. And knowing secular science as he does, and secular philosophy as he does, the prevalent opinion in his time, espoused by philosophers like Descartes, scientists like Newton, was that, yes, the world was created by God, but now the world runs like an automatic machine on autopilot. There is a strong separation between the supernatural and the natural. The Malbim, on the other hand, is very well aware at the opposite end of the spectrum of opinions like those espoused in Masechet Avot in Source 14 and in the Midrash in Source 15. And these opinions promote the idea that, in fact, not that the supernatural and the natural are completely separated into two distinct realms, never having any meeting or encounter between them, but just the opposite. They are very intimately intertwined, so much so that even what we would consider to be supernatural, like a miracle, like a nace, is actually part and parcel of the natural. So, for example, the Mishnah in Masechet Avot teaches us, Asara Dvarim Nivreu Be'erev Shabbat Bein HaShemashot, that there were 10 things created on Erev Shabbat, right before creation, the co-creative process was completed. Among them, you see, for example, Pi Ha'aton, the mouth of the donkey who spoke to Bil'am, or the man, for example, or even the Pi Ha'be'er, which opened up for us in the desert, i.e. what? This Mishnah is teaching us that so-called miracles are really pre-programmed into nature from the very beginning. So too in Source 15, for example, Tina'in hitna kadosh baruch hu im hayam, sheyehei nikra lifnei Yisrael, hadao dichtiv vayashav hayam le'etano, litna'o shehitna'imo. אמר רבי ירמיהו בן אלעזר, לא עם הים בלבד יתנה הקדוש ברוך הוא, אלא עם כל מה שנברא בששת ימי בראשית. רבי יוחנן says, Hashem made conditions, so to speak, from the very beginning when he created certain natural entities within the world, like the ocean, that from the very beginning it was pre-programmed that the yam, at a certain point in time, would split. And they're playing with the word etano, tna'o, just reverse the letters. And therefore the Midrash continues, that's not only thing Hashem made conditions with. He made conditions with all aspects of nature that what? At certain points in time, they would perform so-called miraculous phenomena. The Malbim puts himself in the middle. On the one hand, he doesn't want to say, like the secularists of his day, that there is no connection between the supernatural and the natural. On the other hand, he doesn't want to minimize the idea of the miraculous, the nace, because that in and of itself, in his time where the Jews, the time of the Enlightenment movement, where the Jews are really faltering in their faith, that's a way, if you want to build up miracle, that Hashem really comes down to the world and he can perform miraculous occurrences, that certainly strengthens one's faith. So he adopts a very interesting position with a twist. And he says, on the one hand, as in Source 17, the Malbim explains, based on Tehillim Tzadik Vav, Ki Gadol Hashem U'me'ulal Me'ald Norachu Al Kol Elohim. On the one hand, what does it mean that Hashem is great over Elohim, in this case, over all kochot, from the word el, which means powers, yachol, where I bold face, l'shanotam ulevatlam. On the one hand, he emphasizes, God is not tied to the so-called fixed laws of nature. He is not chained to laws that he, so to speak, put into place. On the one hand, when you think about a machine which has lots of gears, once you put it into place and you establish the rules that gear one has to turn in order for gear two to work, and gear two has to turn for gear three to work, etc. Once you put these laws into place, if you mess up and you tinker, what do? You mess up the whole machine. So on the one hand, the Malbim says no. Hashem is not chained to nature, so to speak, to the laws that he put into place in the first place. He can change them. But elaborating on this idea of uman, of Hashem being an artisan, using artistic tools, so to speak, the Malbim says in Source 18, based on Shmuel, Ein kadosh kashem ki ein biltecha ve'ein tzur kelokenu, playing with the word tzur, he says, there is no yitzur, there is no creator like God. What does that mean? Normally, when an artist makes a piece of pottery, you shape it, you mold it on your pottery wheel, and you stick it on the shelf and you let it dry, right? Once the product is finished, if you touch it and you try to play with it, what happens? The whole thing breaks apart. So the Malbim says, Hashem is not like that. That if you touch it, if he would touch his world, so to speak, that he would create a defect in the world. No, says the Malbim. Look on the sixth or seventh line where I bold-faced. The Malbim says, Yadav bilti misulakot mi ma'aseyu. Hashem is not that kind of artisan. His hands never leave the product that he makes. Rak oskot ba'tamid. He's constantly working on his creation, his artistic creation, the world, nature, everything about the world is a work of art. Why? Gam kiyum hateva hibri'a matmedet. The sustenance of the world is a continuous creation. So that if he would remove his hands 1 minute from it, the whole world would fall apart. Why? Ki gam be'emet hateva hunes matmid v'hashkacha matmedet. What is he telling you? You've got the wrong idea about what nes is in relationship to teva. Because in actuality, teva is nes. Teva, nature, is really a miracle, and he says it's really a greater miracle because it's a constant, perpetual, continuous miracle that every single day, mechadesh b'tuvo b'chol yom, tamid ma'aseh b'reishit. What does a miracle mean? It means when Hashem actively involves himself, and he is actively involved in Teva every single day. So that therefore, when you have time to read at length Source 19, you will learn that when you say in the Mizmor for Shir Shel Yom Shishi, Hashem Malach Geut, Geut Lavesh, Hashem Oz Hitadar, Oz Hitazar, Aftikon Tevel Baltimot, the Malbim explains, Hashem, when he wears garments, Kibyachol, he's wearing two things. He's wearing on the one hand Geut, Ga'ava, and on the other hand, he's wearing oz, strength. What does it mean when he wears oz? Oz represents teva. Why? Because it is nes kavua. It represents strength when you can constantly make sure that the world continually operates, that every year there's a renewal of the cycle of nature. When you see these trees and they look dead now, and in the spring they come alive. Of course, that's certainly a metaphor for us in Galut, that when we see it, we can know we will come alive and we will be reawakened as well, because this is how Hashem emphasizes through the nes of Teva his perpetual and continual Hashkachat Pratit among us. When he wears Geut, that's when he does a so-called nes. But what is a nes, says the Malbim, where I bold-faced in the long paragraph in Source 19, he says, let me just tell you by heart, he says, you know what? You know what the beauty of a nes is in relationship to so-called teva? Because when Hashem performs as if a miracle, and he changes the laws of nature, and establishes new laws, so that in actuality for the Malbim, nes is also a kind of teva, where you put in a new set of laws temporarily. When Hashem performs a nes in one part of the world, the rest of the world continues to function as regularly. Ha'olam kamin hagol noheg. So Hashem says, so the Malbim says, how's that possible? If you change one aspect of a machine, the rest of the machine shouldn't operate. But that's the greatness of Hashem. Hashem can perform a nes with one hand kivyachol, tinkering with the laws of nature, changing them in one part of the world. With the other hand, he continues to operate the world as it should be. That's the nes. The nes is that he can change things here and continue to make sure everything else runs smoothly. So that when Rav Kook, in source number 22, went for a walk with Rav Aryeh Levin in the 1960s. And Rav Aryeh Levin says, I remember, actually it's earlier than 1960s, when I remember, he says, I went for a walk with Rav Kook and I bent down, if you look on the fourth line, at the end. Baderech katafti eze esev perach, v'hizda'azeh Rabbeinu. I bent down, Rav Ari 11 says, and we were going for a nice walk. He was very nice to me. We were talking, we davened, we went for a little tiyul, and I bent down and I picked up a little flower, a little blade of grass. And Rav Kook was very upset. V'amar li benachat, and he said to me, Rebbe, ki hu nizhar me'od levil tiktof b'li to'elet esev operech sheyachol ligdol o litzmoach. Then unless he has a benefit from it, he's going to eat the fruit or whatever. He says he doesn't pick anything in Eretz Yisrael. Why not? Ki ein esev milmata, she'en lo mazal milmala, v'omer lo gedol. Kol tzitz esev omer davar, kol even lo cheshet eset sod, kol habri'a omeret shira. Says because every little tree, every little blade of grass has a connection to the upper worlds. Because Hashem came down to us and showed us that connection by doing himself the act of planting. Even every rock whispers a secret. Hashamayim misaprim kvod kel. Every aspect of nature, if you listen, it sings. It sings a testimony to the greatness of Hashem. And as the Malbim would say, because Teva is Nes. It's a Nes Kavua, it's a Nes Matmid. All you have to do is learn to listen. And therefore, when does Tu B'Shvat come out? Usually, or almost, I think always, close to the Shabbat of Parashat B'Shalach. Of Shabbat what? Shira. When we sing Shirat Hayam and we testify to the greatness of Hashem, when are we singing? After Kriyat Yam Suf, when we see Hashem's forum, his podium, his voice, his open manifestation through nature. All you have to do, says the Sfat Emet in Source 23, the last line, is look for the He'arot of the Torah, the sparks of light. Torah, Hora'ah, reverse the letters, He'ara, Torah, Kiner Mitzvah, the Torah, or just look for the sparks of the Torah, the sparks of Ruchniut, the sparks of Hashem, where? Betoch HaGashmiut, in the physical world. And if you do that, you will raise the physical world up to the upper metaphysical celestial world, and through that you will make an intimate, inimitable bond that will last forever. Thank you.